You're listening to After the Storm, where the healing begins, on UK Health Radio. I'm Brian D. Smith, founder of Grief to Growth and a certified grief guide, life coach, and author. This part of my journey began after the passing of my 15-year-old daughter, Shayna, so I'm doing the work too. Each week, we explore the journey through grief, not just surviving loss, but discovering who you're becoming on the other side of it. This is where the healing begins. I want to start today by making a case. Not a spiritual case, don't worry, a scientific one. Because by the time we're done, I want you to see that what we're going to talk about isn't fringe and it isn't wishful thinking. It's one of the most thoroughly established facts in all of medicine. And somehow, it's one we keep forgetting. We've inherited this particular picture of the human being. It says the body is a machine. Something breaks, you find the broken part, you repair it, or you medicate it, or you cut it out, and the machine runs again. It's like when you take your car to the mechanic. They just look for what's broken, they repair or replace it, and you're back on the road again. But let me be clear. For an enormous amount of what goes wrong with us, that picture works. If I break my arm, I want a surgeon, not a poem, not an energy healer. Modern medicine is a genuine miracle, and nothing I say today takes away a thing from that. But the machine is not the whole story. And the proof of that doesn't come from mystics. It doesn't come from energy healers or from shamans. It comes from inside mainstream science itself. So let's get started. Let's start with the placebo effect. Here's something that most people don't realize. In the U.S., where I live, every single prescription drug on the market has to clear one bar before the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, will approve it. It has to prove that it works better than a sugar pill, the placebo. So sit with what that means. The sugar pill, the placebo, works so well, so reliably, that we have to subtract it out just to see whether the real drug is doing anything at all. Belief is the baseline that every medicine and my cabinet had to beat. And often, more often than we realize, it barely beats it. Let's take antidepressants. When you pull the trials the drug companies handed to the FDA, tens of thousands of patients, the people on the real medication do improve, but the people on the sugar pill improve almost as much. By some analyses, the placebo accounts for roughly 80% of the drug's entire effect. 80%. And in fewer of half of those trials did the real drug clearly beat the placebo at all. People got genuinely, measurably better on nothing but the expectation of getting better. Now you might think, well, that's an antidepressant. That's a mental thing, right? So maybe it just improved their thinking. It didn't really change anything in their body. But there is a mechanism that we believe these drugs work on, right? We believe that they work on the brain or on the blood chemistry. But it isn't just pills. There's a well-known study where surgeons took patients with arthritic knees, and they gave some of those patients real keyhole surgery. They gave others fake surgery. The others got the incisions. They got to the operating theater, the whole performance, but no actual procedure. And the patients who got the pretend operation improved just as much as the ones who got the real one. Their knees got better because some part of them believed that they would. That's the mind reaching into the body and changing it. So I want you to hold that thought. And let me turn to the second pillar I want to make for you today. The second case, epigenetics. We used to believe that your genes were a fixed hand of cards, dealt at birth, and played out no matter what. But we now know that's wrong. Experience can switch genes on and off. And astonishingly, those switches can be passed to your children. There's a study that I keep coming back to. Researchers at Emory University took mice and taught them to fear one very specific smell. In this case, it was cherry blossom. They paired it with a mild shock. And this is ordinary conditioning. The mouse would smell the cherry blossom, they'd be shocked, and they'd have a stress response. And they connected that cherry blossom smell to the shock, to the stress. But here's the part that really gets me. The offspring of those mice, pups that were never shocked, that had never once smelled cherry blossom, flinched at that exact scent. When they smelled cherry blossoms, they flinched. They were physically more sensitive to it. So were the grandchildren of the mice. It even showed up in pups conceived by IVF, or in vitro fertilization. So it wasn't something they picked up by watching a parent. The fear was written into the sperm or the DNA or the ovary or whatever. It was a chemical mark on the gene for sensing that one smell. A parent's living experience, living in the body of a child who never had the experience. And similar experiments have shown the same thing. Of course, it's not ethical to put humans through stress like this, so it's something we can look at from history. We see the human echo in researchers studying the children of Holocaust survivors. They found the fingerprint of their parents' trauma in the stress biology of a generation that wasn't there during the Holocaust. Grief and fear, it turns out, can be inherited, not as a story passed down at the dinner table, but as actual chemistry. The body remembers what the mind was never told. Now put one more thing beside it, something that we could all relate to. The simplest of all, stress. We can watch this one happen in a lab. So we can put a person under sustained strain and their blood pressure climbs. Their immune system dials down. Their wounds heal slower. Colds take hold easier. A thought in the mind becomes a physical event in the body. You've experienced it yourself. When you're stressed out, you might have shallow breathing, a faster heart rate. That's your body responding to something that your mind is experiencing. The line that we like to draw between psychological and physical turns out to be a line that we invented. So here's where all that leaves us. The mind-body connection is not a theory anymore. It has been proven about as thoroughly as anything in medicine. And yet, we still walk into the doctor's office looking only for the mechanical cause, the chemical cause, the broken part. Now, those causes are real. I'm not denying them. They exist. If you break your arm, that's a mechanical thing. But we are not robots. We never were. And once you take that seriously, the question changes. It stops being only what's broken and starts to include, what is this body trying to tell me? So today's episode, I'm going to introduce a guest to you. Her name is Anna Siegel. As a young woman, Anna lived with psoriasis, chronic back pain, and digestive issues that conventional medicine simply wasn't helping with. And in some cases, the more treatment she took, the worse she got. Then, in the middle of a profound loss, she stumbled into a different way of listening to her own body. In fact, she was told by a doctor that her body had chosen to be stuck. And what Anna found changed everything. And it became a book, The Secret Language of Your Body, that has now sold over 1 million copies in more than 24 languages. So I'd like for you to listen to Anna's story, not as proof of anything, but as an invitation to consider that your symptoms might be messengers, not just malfunctions. So here's my conversation with Anna Siegel.
Yeah, so I had psoriasis all over my skin, and I had really bad digestive issues where even when I was very young, I remember ending up in a hospital with no explanation for it. Mm-hmm. I had really bad back pain, and that was the thing that actually changed everything, because whilst psoriasis was very uncomfortable, and I know people who have it would say the same thing, because I had it all over my elbows, all over my knees. It definitely runs in my family. My grandfather's had it. Mm. My dad still has it. His sister is covered with it from head to toe. So it was definitely something that people said, oh, you know, it's genetic. It runs in the family. You know, just keep putting creams on it. And I think the more I went to doctors and the more medicine I took, the worse I got, because it really deeply affected my digestive system. My skin, which is actually connected to the liver, was doing way worse the more I took. And my back pain, I mean, I could only take so many painkillers, you know, without thinking that this is not okay. Like there's got to be some other way. And so my mum, she was very much into just medicine, and she did put doctors on a pedestal. So she eventually took me to a physiotherapist, which didn't help much at that time. And then when I turned 18, I actually ended up, or not when I turned, but at 18, I ended up meeting my first husband in an acting class. And he was very open to alternative medicine and had explored it and researched it. And he decided that the way he would help me while we were dating and so on was by taking me to different people. And I went to everyone from kinesiologists to chiropractors to rolfing to just literally anything that he could think of, definitely naturopath, homeopath. You know, we were trying to look at all the different issues that I was having.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, seeing who can help me. And eventually what kept happening essentially, Brian, was that I would get a little bit better and then I would have a crash. And then when I had the child that died, it was kind of like the biggest crash, like everything that was being held together kind of started falling apart, falling into pieces. And I felt like I was the victim. Like, how could this happen to me? I was so young. I was completely and utterly unprepared for it. So in my mind, I literally thought there's something really wrong with me because this doesn't happen at 20. And it was literally, I turned 20 maybe 2 days after the baby died. But I didn't know. So the whole thing happened around my birthday. And I remember saying to my mom, I'm never going to celebrate my birthday again. It's over for me. I just can't understand how this can happen to somebody in Australia. This happens in third world countries. And obviously, I'm not okay. Obviously, something's happening inside of me that has been happening for a while, but this is showing that that there's something completely wrong with me in my body. And I think that he felt like he needed to shake me, he needed to get me to do something that was different to what we had been doing for over a year by that stage. And he actually came out of his office and he looked at me and he said, well, your body's stuck. And I said, yeah, I know that part. What are you going to do to help me? And he was very quiet for a moment and he was really thinking about what to say and I think how to help me to wake me up from, you know, from this state that I was in. And he basically said, well, there's nothing I can do for you at the moment. You know, your body actually wants to be stuck. And when I heard that, I definitely felt enraged in terms of how dare he says this and what do you mean you can't help me and what am I meant to do? And so when I left on the way back home, I was reflecting on what he was saying on this, your body's stuck, you know, so what does it mean? Does it mean my body has a language? What is this language? What is it speaking to me in? And at that point, I had been studying professional writing and editing at university, and I was doing a subject on linguistics. And so in my mind, it was easy to think in language in terms of, you know, how do we break language down? How does it work? And I was thinking to myself, it's almost like my body is speaking to me in Japanese and I don't know Japanese. I don't even know the letters. I can't even recognize them.
Yeah.
And it's speaking to me in this language that that is giving me an opportunity here to learn and to discover, but I know zero, nothing about it. However, at the same time, I made a decision and it was something I'd never done. I felt like I tried everything. I was one of those people who would say, I've tried it all and nothing works for me. And I remember thinking, the only thing I haven't really tried is self-healing because I don't actually know how to do it. But I'm just going to improvise when I get home. And so I actually just started from breathing into my back. And as I was doing that, it occurred to me that I was always breathing shallowly. I never, ever allowed myself to breathe deeply, except if I was in an acting class. So that occurred to me. And I was feeling inspired. I was feeling kind of open to it. But otherwise, I would shut down and breathe very shallowly. And I was really afraid of feeling that pain that was inside my body. And I was afraid of discovering anything that was really going on. And so I gave myself permission to do that. And I was then counting backwards from 30 because my mind was quite negative. And as I was doing that, there was this moment of clarity in space. And in that moment, I remember thinking, why don't I ask for divine help?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I might as well ask. And so when I asked, I felt this warmth again coming into my body, similar to the warmth that I felt when I had the experience with the angel. And there was an unwinding that was happening. And since I had my eyes closed, I could see this warm, yellowy, golden light, like the sunlight shining onto you. And another thought came at that point, a thought I'd never had. And the thought was, I wonder what my body actually looks like. I wonder what my back looks like. And at that point, again, within moments, it felt like this switch was turned on and I could see my back. And as I was seeing it and the inflammation, I could see all the vertebrae. It was literally in that moment, it looked like having an X-ray. And I remember thinking, okay, so if I could discover why I have all this, and not from the victim perspective that I've been exploring this from, but from a place of, I actually want to know, I want to understand, how did I get here? What is this language? What is this about? Why do I have pain everywhere in my body? Why do I have all these issues at this young age? What would it be? And what happened next was kind of like memory connected to a vision, connected to wisdom. And so I started seeing what happened when I came to Australia. So I didn't know one word of English, and I went to school and I was from the wrong part of the world. You know, I was bullied, I was attacked, I cried every day for years going to school. And it became very clear that this is when I started getting psoriasis all over my skin. And psoriasis and obviously skin conditions are connected to how comfortable we feel within ourselves. Or this is something I found out later on, but it made sense to me that I did not feel comfortable in any way or form to be myself. And so it, so yeah, psoriasis appeared. And then, you know, as I was feeling through all the things that I was seeing, as much as I was capable of doing in that time, the images started to change and I started to become aware of when my back pain appeared and the tinges of it appeared at 14, and then at around 16 it became really bad. So as I was asking these questions, I was shown that at around 14 I changed schools, and I ended up going to and I had changed schools prior to that as well. Mm-hmm. So I had to end up, this was my I think fourth school at that point in terms of in Australia. And as I went to this particular school, it was a private school, and the children, or the majority of children who were there, about 90% of them, came from insane wealth, like wealth that I'd never seen in my life. And then there was me and my friends, who all came from Eastern Europe, who came from the kind of poverty that the people in that school had never even dreamed of existed or considered existed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this massive conflict between them and us. And most of my friends, including myself, started to kind of compensate by self-protecting. And so a lot of my friends ended up with scoliosis. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was more about the lower back pain and sciatica, which later on, again, as I was discerning and trying to understand the body, I find out it was very much connected to struggle and finance and my parents and their relationship. They were in constant conflict with each other. They had moved to a new country, again, with a completely different way of living and seeing things. And, you know, they were always fighting about money. They had the opposite views of money and, you know, how to, I guess, work with it or deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a child who was very sensitive, absorbed it all inside of myself. And so all of that struggle was within me. And again, as this became very clear to me, I started to feel a deeper unwinding inside my lower back. And the last thing that became very clear was the ancestral aspect, not just of the fact that I had skin issues, but also that I had digestive issues. And the digestive issues exploded and became really painful once I had the child that died, to a degree where I found it very hard to eat anything. And I had a conversation with my grandmother at one point, and she said to me, "I wish that it was me." So she wished that it was her who had died instead of this baby. And my grandmother actually grew up in a family where her mother was clairvoyant, and mother had 8 children, and just before the war started, my grandmother was the oldest. She was 12, and her mother said to her, "The war is coming and we're all going to die except you and your father. And I'm going to have to hide you and protect you so that when the time comes, you're going to hide and you're going to run." And when the time came, her mother, who had a 3-month-old baby at the time, had asked somebody to hold the baby and protected my grandmother with her own body. And so she said to my grandmother, "You run, they're going to shoot. Do not look back." And so my grandmother did. That's what she did. And she essentially lost everybody in her family except her father. Her father came back from the war 4 years later. He didn't live for long, like mother predicted. And my grandmother essentially had this enormous, enormous trauma that she never talked about until she came to Australia. The way she talked about it prior to that was just giving very, kind of very small details, and only to the main person she shared it with was my grandfather. So when she was in Australia, when she came here, it was like she felt the freedom to talk about it. And in that moment, I realized why I had all the digestive issues that I had, because how do you digest experiences like that? And essentially, I realized that everyone in the family had digestive issues. And yeah, after that, I had an inkling that I was this sponge as well. I was one of those people who sponged off others. Whenever they had issues, I would then have issues as well. And I fell asleep after this massive kind of day of realizations. And then when I wake up the next day, there was about 70% of the pain that was gone in terms of back pain, and felt different. I felt like it was the first time that I was the person who transformed the pain, because I've had this experience before where the pain would go to 30 or 20%, but it was never me who did it. It was always the chiropractor or rolfing practitioner, whatever, whoever I was seeing. And so I remember thinking, hey, well, don't get too excited because it may not last. But because I have a skeptical nature, but keep exploring and see what happens. And so for the next 3 weeks, I spent a lot of time in bed. I spent a lot of time asking questions, journaling, writing things down, just kind of trying to listen to my body and what it was really saying and what it was about, and putting the different pieces of the puzzle together. And by the end of this 3 weeks, all the psoriasis disappeared and all the back pain disappeared. The anxiety that I had went right down, and I kind of went, okay, wow, something feels much more real that has happened. My digestive system improved so I could eat, but it took years and years for that part to get better. And I always say I still have to be aware of certain things like milk. You know, I can't just drink milk or eat a lot of cheese without having some effect inside my body. Nothing like it used to be. But all of this kind of led me to go, oh my God, wow, my body is actually intelligent. And then I realized that the same way that I had that experience of seeing into my own body, I started seeing into other people's bodies.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So you had this revelation and you saw that, I guess, some of your stuff was your stuff from your personal experience, but some was also ancestral. And was it just the seeing and the awareness that you think started clearing things up? Because it sounds like you weren't doing any, like, you know, really involved techniques or anything. Was it just the awareness?
I think there was awareness, there was a lot of emotional release that it was happening for me at the time. There was a lot of self-reflection and starting to see things from new perspectives at the time. So there wasn't a real technique as much as there was more of a letting go and a recognition and a shift in perception.
Mm-hmm.
At that time for me.
And so you saw this in yourself, and then you said, then you began to see it in other people. How did that manifest?
There were two things that happened at the time. One was my partner at the time had a friend that had come over, and she was very good at writing. So I was doing an assignment that I needed to hand in. And I asked her if she could come and sit next to me, next to the computer, and read it with me and give me some suggestions. So she did. And as I was reading and typing, and I kept kind of looking back and forth, at one point as I was looking at her, I saw this cartoon-looking liver above her head. And I kept opening and closing my eyes because I thought, oh my God, now I'm going insane. And she said to me, do you have something in your eye? And I said, well, no, but can I ask you a really strange question? And she said, sure. And I said, do you have liver problems? And she said, yeah, I do, actually. How do you know? And when she said that, the image changed, and I actually saw an older man. I just knew it was her grandfather. And I said, well, did your grandfather have the same issue? And she said, yes, he did. And I had a sense that her grandfather had been in a concentration camp, and she acknowledged that. And then I said, do you get nightmares? And she said, yeah, I do. And then I said to her something that I thought, oh my God, I paid zero attention in science, in biology. I wish, you know, when I was at school, I wish that I had, because I cannot believe I'm saying this because I actually don't know what I'm saying. And I said to her, well, the issues that you're dealing with in terms of your health are connected to your DNA. And she's like, okay, thanks for sharing. And then I said a lot of things to do with her family that she didn't know. And she called her mum, and she spoke to her for about half an hour. And her mum acknowledged everything I had said. And so when she spoke to me afterwards, she was like, Oh my God. She was 25 at the time. She said, I've learned more in the last hour or so than I knew in the last 25 years of my life about myself and my family. I was really, what was really interesting was that she ended up doing these specific tests 2 years later, and all the stuff that I said, including the DNA, came. Like that's what they said. It was,
You mentioned earlier, and I know in some your other material, you mentioned the secret language of the body. And you mentioned earlier you had this intuition that your body was speaking Japanese. And it's interesting, like you said, not only do I not speak Japanese, I can't even read the characters. So when we're going through these things, is it our body trying to tell us something? The pain and the disease that we go through?
Well, it's a combination of the body and what embodies the body, which is the soul, and I know we can talk about this on your podcast. So the soul is the part of you that makes you who you are, makes you individual, makes you unique. And it's also inside of it has something called the astral body. And the astral body is the body of sensations. So it's the body of pleasure and it's the body of pain. So, and it's also connected to all your emotions. So the astral body is what's actually constantly showing you whether you have pain inside and what it's really about in terms of your experiences. But the astral body is actually also connected to the etheric body, which is the body of memory. And also the body of vitality, and also connected to ancestry. And so, what it does is it presses into the etheric, and then the etheric body, which is the copy of the physical and looks the same as the physical or almost the same, will press into the physical body in terms of showing us what's really going on in terms of our experience. So essentially, it's a lot of pain. I'm not going to say all pain, but a lot of pain is connected to, emotional experiences that have been pushed away and suppressed for often long periods of time, intertwined with the memory and the perception of it. And so part of the language of the body is actually identifying the fact that wherever it's stored inside your body, there is a connection to certain wisdom and certain experiences based on what the body actually does in terms of its function. So each part of the body is also storing things in terms of that language. So when we break things down and we go, okay, so eyes are about seeing, ears about hearing. What am I hearing that is not working? And I actually did a podcast recently, and the lady had an issue with her ears, and we broke it down, and she went, oh my God, wow, that makes complete sense, because she was overwhelmed and hearing so many things from so many people that her body just went, I don't even know what I believe. I'm going to block it all out,
So what you're saying, and you said you may have confused me and other people, it is a little bit complicated because from my understanding, we do have multiple bodies and they're kind of like Russian nesting dolls. So you've got, and I don't know the different levels, but they're like different levels of the body. And so what happens in the spiritual or in the astral can affect us in the physical. And so, it's interesting because I find that like you were talking about some of the ailments that you were going through that started breaking your body down, but then you had the when you lost the child, that pushed you to the point where you actually made a transformation. So these things are trying to tell us something, I think sometimes the ailments that we're going through are saying, this is something you need to look at. This is something you need to look at. And it'll keep kind of nudging us until we kind of wake up and actually look at these things.
Well, 100%. And I think that when we are willing to see things in a much more spiritual way, we start to go, I'm not just a physical body.
Right.
And the pain that comes into my life experience is there to teach me something, to help mm-hmm. me to become a deeper person, to help me to grow. And it's kind of, I think when you have a massive loss in your life, especially early on, it really creates a, I guess it makes you who you are afterwards, mm-hmm. and it either makes you explore and opens up your perception of what is possible, or it shuts you down completely.
I think that grief and loss are here to teach us, as painful as they are. And that's what, you know, that's what my podcast is about. I talk to people who have gone through these profound losses, and those are the things that really transform us, you know. And so as you share your story and we hear about the things you went through, that the loss of a child is one of the worst things that anybody can go through. And that, and we can choose, right? We can choose to try to stuff that inside, and it can make us sick, or we can choose to process it and it can transform us. And that's what you've done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it makes you a much deeper, more compassionate person, and someone who, you know, who's able to hold that space
right.
for somebody else to experience whatever they need to experience.
Everything Anna learned about her own body, she eventually put into a book and a set of programs. I asked her what makes it actually work for people, not just to read, but to feel.
I feel like there's a depth and an accuracy to the book. And then I also write, you know, layered processes for people. Because, you know, as we were talking about and you were asking the questions, Brian, around when I started, I had no idea. I had no concept of what to do. Mm-hmm. And so it was just made up. And then when I was writing the book, I was looking at, you know, everything from how do you work with your mind? And I thought everybody can work with their mind, so I'm going to put something about that in every process, how to let go or change your mind or release things.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can work with their emotions, so I'm going to talk about emotions. I started learning about energy, and the easiest way that I felt that I could teach people about energy was through color.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I'm going to put information about color and how to work with it into the book. And I'm also going to look at the systems of the body and how they are giving you messages, in which case I'm going to ask a lot of questions in every process so that the person can get to know themselves. And the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get people to breathe, to move, to touch, to work with pressure points, because I started learning about that.
Mm-hmm.
I did years and years of yoga training. So I was like, there's ways of moving or kind of opening your mouth and doing certain exercises with, you know, with sound or with your tongue that can help you to cleanse things from the body. And so I looked at everything from Chinese medicine to pressure point reflexology to, you know, to essentially anything that was really simple and easy to teach people.
Mm-hmm.
Where they could take charge of their own body.
One thing she's emphatic about, this is a practice, not a one-time fix.
And I was given an opportunity to do it online,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't realize that actually doing it online was going to create way better results than even live, because people could, you know, could do workshops with me and processes and then repeat them, because you actually have to repeat this, right? You cannot just do it once. And sometimes people will say, oh, but you did it once and you healed. No, I did not do it once. I spent, you know, weeks originally working on the conditions that I had without really knowing what I was doing, and then years working on my digestive system.
Right.
So, you know, so it was an instant in that sense. And the more I understood all the different parts and how they come together, all the, you know, stages of healing that we go through, and how all of this is so important to know in order to recognize where am I stuck and how can I heal and how can I sensitize my body so that it can become my friend as opposed to my enemy.
Yeah.
And so I started doing these masterclasses and mini workshops to introduce people to that information. And then if they wanted to go deeper, then they could.
That was Anna Siegel, and you've been listening to After the Storm on UK Health Radio, and I'm Brian Smith. I want to sit with one thing she said, because it's the whole episode in one sentence. Her chiropractor told her, your body wants to be stuck. She was furious, but she went home and she asked a different question. Not how do I fix this, but what is this trying to say? And the pain in her back turned out to be tied to a childhood of being uprooted and bullied, to her parents' fear about money, to a grandmother who survived a war she could never speak of. None of that shows up on an x-ray. All of it was living in her body. Now, I want to be as careful here as I was at the top. And this story is not a prescription. Please do not hear any of this as stop seeing your doctor or your illness is your fault. That is actually the opposite of what I want to say. Your illness is not your fault. That's not the message. And it would be a cruel one. The science I mentioned earlier, the placebo trials, the stress studies, the epigenetics of inherited trauma, none of it says the body is imaginary. It says the body is bigger than what we were taught. It includes the mechanical and the chemical. It just doesn't end there. You may be carrying trauma that you never experienced from your parents or grandparents. The things that have happened to you that put some of the thoughts in your head, those come from the outside as well. So please don't take this as saying that any of this is your fault. And again, the mechanical is a part of this. So continue to see your doctor and take their advice. But here's what I take from it. If stress can raise my blood pressure, then calm is medicine too. If belief can heal a knee, then what you believe about your own healing matters. And if grief can be passed down through generations, then doing the work to actually feel it might be one of the most physical things you ever do for your health and for the people who come after you. Inna put it plainly, we can stuff our pain down and it can make us sick, or we can turn toward it and let it transform us. The body keeps a score either way. The choice is whether we listen. If anything in this land are for you, Inna's book is The Secret Language of Your Body, and you'll find her work and her masterclass at innasegal.com. That's InnaSegal.com. And if you're carrying a loss right now or a pain that won't quite explain itself, be gentle with yourself this week. You are not a machine that's malfunctioning. You're a whole person, body, mind, and spirit, trying to tell yourself something true. Thank you for spending this time with me. I'm Brian Smith. This has been After the Storm here on UK Health Radio. Take good care of yourself, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for spending this time with me on After the Storm. If today's conversation resonated with you, I'd love to continue the journey together. You can find more of my work at www.grieftogrowth.com. That's grief, G-R-I-E-F, the numeral 2, growth.com. Until next week, remember, after the storm is where the healing begins.